accession number 18667, Reel 1.
Dr. Robertson, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
West Bromwich, Staffs.
Which year was this?
1919.
Can you tell me, first of all, when and how you came to go to Afghanistan, please?
Yes. I have been friendly for many years with the head of WHO Afghanistan. He is actually a Libyan, and I have had a lot to do with the country of Libya. And he suggested that I should go to have a look at the hospital facilities throughout Afghanistan, and I first went in December 1994.
Was this as an official representative of WHO?
Yes, it was as a visiting short-term consultant. And I created a slight precedent because I went in an entirely unpaid capacity. And this caused them some embarrassment, because they normally take from your salary something towards your insurance. And they had nothing to take from me because I had no salary.
So were you insured when you went?
I was insured by WHO, and they had to pay the premium, which was $100 a day.
What season of the year did you go in 1994?
I went in November, December.
And did you have some kind of brief, apart from visiting, looking at the hospital facilities?
Well, the brief was simply to make myself known to the heads of the various public health districts that I visited, to see the hospitals, to see the superintendent, and to make some suggestions, as well as telling them just how perhaps they could be improved.
Had you had any previous experience of what are sometimes called third world countries?
Oh, yes. I had been about a dozen times to all the hospitals in Libya doing similar sort of work.
And what kind of preparations did you have to make before going out to Afghanistan?
I don't think I made any preparations except trying to get suitable clothes, taking a notebook, taking a stethoscope, and taking a camera.
Would you have had any staff there? Anyone
no.
to work for you?
No, but I was always made welcome by whoever was head of the local WHO office. And they had offices throughout, or centres throughout Afghanistan, unlike the other UN agencies.
How did you actually get out to the country?
Well, I flew to Islamabad, and from there I went in a UN plane to the various places. At that time, the Khyber Pass was closed to UN personnel, so you couldn't go by road. It really wasn't safe, and you couldn't get to Kabul except by air.
And what was the political and military situation in the country at that time?
Well, Taliban really didn't start until the end of 1994. And at that time, it was largely President Rabbani was still in Kabul, and there were various, as we might call, warlords around the place, Hekmatyar and Ismail Khan, in different areas.
Did you feel apprehensive about going?
Not in the slightest.
What happened to you on arrival?
Well, on arrival, I was greeted by my friend and then was given a program and then just had to get on with it. And I would fly from Islamabad on a UN plane to, if it was the north, it would be Mazar-i-Sharif. If it was the west, it would be Herat. And in the south, to Kandahar. The first time I couldn't get to Kandahar because there was fighting.
And did it bear any resemblance at all to Libya?
No, I don't think it did, except that essentially it's a Muslim country. But experience in Libya, where I was treated with the greatest courtesy by very nice people, led me to believe that what you read in the paper about these so-called third world countries just wasn't correct. I just found so many nice people.
And what did you find as far as the hospital facilities were concerned?
Well, tremendous poverty, virtually no facilities. For example, there wasn't one single electrocardiographic machine that I saw working. And the first time, I did not see one X-ray machine in any hospital that was working. So the reasons for that were that there are some private X-ray machines done by private doctors, and they were helping through the technicians to sabotage the machines in the hospitals. I found that out from an X-ray technician. So I had a message sent that if I told some of the commanders about that, some of the X-ray technicians might possibly have a little accident with a gun, mightn't they? That sort of message perhaps helped.
How did they effect with sabotage?
Oh, it's very easy to sabotage an X-ray machine. You just pull out a few wires, and then nobody knows how to put them back. The other trouble was, of course, that in most places, although they had enough money, the local commanders, to buy rockets, they didn't have enough money to give a hospital one of these special plants for making electricity when the main power went down.
And where had all the machinery, like electrocardiograph machinery and so on, come from originally?
Well, it had been bought in the past. But you see, things that many third world countries want, and that's been my experience in other countries, is machinery. What they don't get is anyone to maintain them. Firms are extremely good at selling you stuff, but no good at maintaining them. And that's been my experience in a lot of places. There are always salesmen to sell you X-ray plants or complicated modern machinery, but they won't maintain them. And you haven't got the electricians to do it. So the sort of recommendation that I would make was that if they had WHO special classes for teaching technicians how to maintain equipment, that would be far more use than providing them with the equipment that they wanted. They got the stuff there, but they couldn't maintain it.
How was your recommendation received?
Well, WHO thought that that was satisfactory, and they have set up a number of special courses for technicians, and that fitted in well with the way they wanted to spend money. See, a lot of this comes down to finance. That is, that they had a very limited budget from the various non-governmental organizations or NGOs, and everybody was screaming for money. And the sort of recommendation I gave was that the hospital should get nothing for towards equipment. What they should get money for was training their technicians to use what they've got and spend more money on primary care, and then people wouldn't have to go to hospital in any case.
What kind of primary care?
Well, the primary care would be treating them with drugs or treating them at home, and not thinking that everybody had to go to hospital, because the hospital was, in quotes, not really what I would call a hospital at all. It was just a collection of rather dirty beds.
And what about the medical personnel available in Afghanistan?
Well, the local doctors, some of them were perfectly competent, and WHO did send a number on courses to Liverpool, to the tropical school, and I've met them and been friendly with them here. What they have tried to do, because too many people want to come to England or other countries and then don't want to go back, so that they've tried to organise classes with the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine so that people can be taught in Afghanistan, which is almost certainly a much better way.
Did you find much difference between the different areas, say Kabul, Herat, Mazar-e-Sharif?
Yes, there was a bit of difference, depending on the background history of the places, you see. Herat, for example, is known as the City of Martyrs. It's very near to Iran. And their refugee problem would be different from the refugee problem at Mazar. And the camps, for example, at Jalalabad would be different from the camps elsewhere, because you've got two groups of people. You've got those who were refugees from the country and those who were refugees from the district and called internally displaced personnel. They couldn't stay in Kabul because they hadn't perhaps agreed with the people at the time and had to leave. And that would be different from those elsewhere.
Was there much difference in the level of facilities or development in north, south, east and west? And so on?
I think probably not. It depended a little bit on the local people. For example, one of the best equipped hospitals I saw was the Turkish Friendship Hospital at a place called Shebagan in the northwest. That's about 200 kilometers west of Mazar. And that was because they had quite an association with Turkey. General Dostum was in charge when I first went. And his 2IC, a doctor, I became friendly with. And his hospital was very good, helped by the Turks.
So much depended on the impact of individual personalities?
I think it did, yes.
What was the kind of level of administration of the medical facility?
I thought that the administrators in general were virtually totally incompetent. Where there was somebody from WHO, it wasn't bad. In Kabul, there was, as I found out this last time, one highly competent lady in charge. She had been a surgeon general in the Afghan army, and although Taliban at first sight packed her off, they called her back because she had such a good reputation and was so competent.
Why did they initially pack her off?
Because she was in the Afghan army, which was fighting the Taliban. And when the Taliban came in and got rid of the Afghan army and the previous Rabbani administration from Kabul, this lady who had been in charge of the army hospital had to leave. But she was recalled, and I can say without hesitation that she was the only really competent hospital administrator I met. Some were not bad, but others were very bad. Let me give you an example. I went to the main hospital in Mazar-e-Sharif on two occasions, about 18 months separate. On the second occasion, I asked the superintendent if they could do any ECGs or EKGs, that's electrocardiograms for heart. Oh yes, he said, we've got an instrument. So I said, well, I would like you to show it to me. And he took me to the ward where I saw the same broken instrument in the same place that I had seen 18 months previously. So I reported that this administrator knew nothing and I thought was incompetent. Now, that's only to WHO, but it means that whether they believe me or not, it doesn't exactly give him full marks for continuing in that job.
So, you'd gone in 1994. How long did your first trip last?
Well, I went in December 94, and I went again in June 95, and I went again in, sometime in 96, and then 97 in December. That's just about 13 months ago. I haven't been since then.
So you were going virtually every year for a period of about 3 years?
Well, I did 4 visits.
Every time under the same auspices?
Yes, with WHO.
What kind of changes did you see in the situation over that period of time?
Well, Rabbani he was the president. He had gradually had the area of under his control diminished until last time it's down to about 20%, and it's mainly up in the north. But I was able to go to the north to Faizabad, that's in Badakhshan, because WHO has always maintained entirely independent facilities, whoever was in charge, and has got on in every district they've been to, because they have never been confrontational and they've always agreed to work with the local people, the local shura, as they call them.
What does shura mean?
Shura means the local town council, essentially, or the equivalent, the local elders. They're all men, and it's semi-religious, but they're the responsible people who say whether things can or cannot be done.
And over this period, 94 to 97, did you come into contact at all with any hostilities?
No. No, there was no fighting, because WHO would not have agreed to let me go where there was actual fighting. When I was in Kandahar, it happened that there was a plane came down from Lostam and bombed not so far away and also in Herat. But that was nothing like that we had, for example, living near to Liverpool during the war.
Can you tell me more details of what you discovered personally about Taliban, about which we've heard quite a bit through, rather unfavorably, through the British media?
Yes. Well, I can say that I went to Kabul in December 47, you see, that's 13 months ago. And 97. And when I went with a UN commission, not as a member of it, but in the same plane with them. And I went there the day after we'd been up to Faizabad, where we'd met the previous president, Rabbani, and this time we were met by the Deputy Minister of Health in Kabul. His name was also Rabbani. And when he had done all the polite facilities with all the people, and they'd gone off to have their discussions, I said to him that I had been sent by WHO and I'd like to talk to him. So he gave me time the next morning, and I said I would like to see the hospitals in Kabul, and I'd like his written permission to see any hospital, ask any question of anybody, preferably without the local superintendent being there. He gave me that permission in writing, the only condition being that I should then have lunch with him at his home and tell him of my findings. And I thought that was a very good beginning. I was able, with the excellent interpreter I had, to go to 12 different hospitals and inspect them all, which was more than any of his staff or any of the Ministry of Health people there had done. It so happened that we had a good chance of close personal relationships, because he then came with me by car from Kabul to Jalalabad through some of the really terrible passes. And it happened that we had two punctures, so that it took us about 7 hours instead of about 4 hours. And so we had a meal together in the mountains, and he couldn't have been kinder.
Did you get the impression that the Taliban regime was helpful or not to the population?
Well, I think they've been extremely helpful in the sense that they have disarmed them. It is now perfectly safe to go by car between almost any city without any trouble, whereas previously there were bands of brigands everywhere with arms. Now, I regard that as an enormous improvement. I've been to several districts, for example, within 50 miles of Jalalabad, which would have been totally impossible in the past. Now, it's perfectly true that they have had rules which Women's Lib don't like. But the people who made the most fuss are someone like the lady from the EU who went out there to inspect a hospital and took photographers with her. And she was arrested. And I personally thought that was the best thing that could have happened, because you don't go photographing women in hospital. You don't go photographing women anyhow, certainly without their permission. And they knew that a good many of these people who make a lot of trouble are chain-smoking lesbian women. And they weren't their favourite people.
What about the attitude towards you by the general population? Was there any hostility towards you as a Westerner?
Not in the slightest. On one Friday in Kabul, I went a walk with another colleague, and I made a point of stopping and talking to the many groups of men which were around. There were a surprising number which had some English, and the way I've managed is usually when there are a group of people, I go up to the one who looks the largest and most prominent and shake him by the hand, and if the interpreter's with me, say how pleased I am to be able to meet someone in their own country. And it goes down very well. In the past, before Taliban was there, I used to do the same thing with groups of men, and they were usually armed. So I would go to the one who seemed to be the leader and shake his hand. And I found that approach worked very well, particularly if you do it holding your hand out and have a smile. I've never had the slightest problem anywhere in Afghanistan.
Would they have known that you were an Englishman?
Well, they know from my clothes that I'm not an Arab, and sometimes they'd say, are you from Holland, or where are you from? I would never be asked if I were American.
Did you discover anything about the attitude in Afghanistan towards their neighbouring countries, Pakistan, Iran, Russia, and even China?
No, I don't think I did. I never discussed politics with them at all.
Did you get any indication of the experiences of the population over the less disturbed period since the 70s?
Well, I had a certain amount of information about the time that the Russians were there, and they didn't have anything good to say about that. But I had an interesting experience only about 6 months ago, because I was in Moscow and I was introduced to a Russian interpreter for the Russian army who had been based just south of Kabul. And he spoke of the time when the brigands were trying to liquidate them. And I said, well, I'm interested you used the word brigand about the local the local population. So I would have thought that they were entirely justified in trying to liquidate you. Anyhow, there we are.
What did you discover whether there was still a communist party or a communist strength amongst the population?
No, I had nothing to do with politics.
So what do you think of the prospects for the country now, especially from the medical point of view?
Well, I think that things are very difficult because of the American attitude to Osama bin Laden. Now, he is an Arabian, Saudi Arabian, I think, and he is in Afghanistan at the moment, and it's a pity that they've been that he's been made welcome there. He is extremely wealthy, I understand. But you see, this is the sort of problems we have in this country. If we have somebody who is a Yemeni in London who possibly is helping to organize something in the Yemen, I just don't like to get involved in the political views at all about that. My only interest has been that of the WHO, who want to help the local population, irrespective of whoever is in charge. And having met and talked to people on all sides, if you meet the community leaders, they're like the local town councillors in a way, in the various places, you get a different point of view from if you only read what is in the newspapers. For example, I met a number of community leaders near to Jalalabad. That's about, let's say, 100 miles east of Kabul on the way to the Khyber Pass. And I asked them if there had been any change in their villages or their work since Taliban had taken over. And they looked surprised and said, no. There are no guns about now, but there's no other difference. We're carrying on as usual.
In most of the Asian countries I've heard about, there's usually